what weather brings.
Hey, this time on Weather Brains, a member of the Weather Brains crew gets a special award in Washington, D.C.
He won't pat himself on the back, but it is a big deal.
We'll explain. Also, weather radios in mobile homes.
They probably can do it for $20 a trailer.
CJ's Law from one state takes a step closer toward becoming a requirement nationwide.
This crosses all party lines here. It's a good thing.
Details on that coming up, and you'll also hear about a new forecast tool offered by the National Weather Service that's really smoking.
It's specifically for burning fires that we have information from satellite.
Plus, Kevin Selly is back with us and happy to be here. Very happy to be here. How happy to be here, Kevin?
In fact, so happy to be here, I want to give stuff away.
All right, we'll find out what Kevin and Weather Brains will be giving away coming up. Welcome to episode number 74 of Weather Brains, the netcast that's all about weather, produced by the Weather Company. I'm David Black. With me for this ride, some very special folks. James Spann, back from vacation. Welcome back, James. How you doing?
Good to be back. How's everybody?
Doing great. And speaking of doing great, I think I can speak for somebody else who's with us this time. We haven't heard this voice in many moons. Kevin Selly, Dallas, Texas. Welcome back.
Who? Hey, guys. Thank you for welcoming me back. I appreciate it. I appreciate you letting me take a couple of weeks off. I appreciate you letting me come back. I actually had to have some back surgery, and appreciate the thoughts and the prayers, and I'm working my way back into the groove and happy to be here. In fact, so happy to be here, I want to give stuff away.
Oh!
Talk about that. I love giving stuff away, especially when it's not mine. But we'll talk
Is it S&H Green Stamps?
Well, maybe we'll see if we can throw some of those in.
Yeah, that's the ticket. And speaking of the ticket, J.B. Elliott with us as well. How are you, Mr. Elliott? What's up?
C plus.
Well, you know, I look at folks who've had various maladies to deal with, such as Mr. Selly having his back issues, and I guess C plus is better than where you could be. Kevin, let me ask you this. Does having the back problems that you had, does it help you not take good health for granted so much anymore?
Boy, I know that's right. What really is striking to me is what they tell me is the recovery. I mean, to me, I thought, okay, they're going to go in and they're going to cut up my back. In a couple of days, I'll be up. I'll be fine. But I've actually got, I think, most of July before I even start physical therapy. Mm. And then most of August to do that. So it's kind of a long road, which is sort of interesting. And, you know, us guys, we want to have a cough or the flu for a couple of days and then get up and run around. So it does make you appreciate that and understand it and be a little more respectful of it.
I understand
yeah, it definitely
that.
Does.
Speaking of the cough, Mr. Spann, you sounded just a tiny bit raspy or sore-throated to me there. Let me hear you say something else here. Let me figure this out.
I got the bubonic plague here or something. I'm going to the doctor. Like, we've got sick bay here tonight.
Yeah.
I'm going to the doctor tomorrow. I think I've got whooping cough.
Ooh.
I mean, as crazy as that sounds, you know, you do a lot of study on this, and I'm pretty convinced that's what it is.
You're not kidding. You're serious. You really think you have it?
Yeah. I'll find out tomorrow. And if for adults, you know, all you can do is just cough for 6 weeks, and it goes away slowly but surely. It can be fatal for infants. And,
yeah.
You know, you just got to stay away from children, so we'll see. But I'm okay. You go through a pretty long period without coughing, but once you start those coughing spells, it's pretty bad.
So it is the Weather Brain Sicko Award, and it's perfect. You've got some type of throat issue, a cough, and you're doing a 30-minute talk show about weather. Go figure.
Love it.
Well,
makes no sense at all.
And we've got to make you talk a little bit because you're back off of vacation, and you traveled to Washington, D.C., and I have to tell you something, James. While you were gone, your Weather Brains cohorts were known to have referred to you as a rat fink. Do you know why?
Oh, right. Why?
Well, because you didn't really go into a whole lot of detail with your Weather Brains cohorts about what was going to be going on when you went to Washington. We kind of hear you're taking this trip, and we think, okay, well, it's vacation. He's taking some time off, which is fine, no problem. But we did find out that your trip to Washington was not all 100% vacation. James traveled to Washington to get a special thanks from the federal government. This is no lie. June 21st, he was presented with the Mark Trail Award. Correct me if I'm wrong, James. From the National Weather Service. James is one of 15 people receiving the honor this year. Now, since James wasn't exactly forthcoming with his receiving this award, we took it upon ourselves to do a little bit of investigating, and I spoke with Chris Vaccaro, a public information specialist with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, in Washington. Chris, what's the Mark Trail Award all about?
Well, each year the National Weather Service honors individuals and organizations with a Mark Trail Award, and this award signifies their extraordinary effort in widening the reach of NOAA Weather Radio.
And you guys picked James Spann. Why?
Correct. James, along with some other colleagues in the broadcast meteorology field, had worked with the public supermarkets in building a public awareness campaign on NOAA Weather Radio, and also repeatedly encouraged viewers to the benefits of NOAA Weather Radio and encouraging them in purchasing and owning a NOAA Weather Radio. And for that, countless lives can be saved.
So this is Uncle Sam's way of saying thanks to James Spann.
Correct. And NOAA Weather Radio has so many life-saving benefits to it, and the more people that we have out there that are promoting its services and encouraging the public to purchase such units, we're all grateful for that.
Tell me a little bit, if you can, about the actual ceremony where this was presented.
Sure. The ceremony was held at the Cannon House office building on Capitol Hill. It was spotlighted by the NOAA Administrator Conrad Lautenbacher and also Mary Glacken, who is the acting director of the National Weather Service. Also highlighted at the ceremony is Jack Elrod, who is the creator and illustrator of the Mark Trail cartoon.
Tell me about how the whole Mark Trail connection started.
Well, the Mark Trail series and Jack Elrod, via his creation, Mark Trail, goes through several environmental-related issues. So in terms of protecting the environment and being kind to nature, and part of that is also respecting Mother Nature and the forces that she can deal with. And in, as part of that and as part of the safety messages as a result of that, Jack Elrod has incorporated NOAA Weather Radio messages into those cartoon strips.
So all the people getting these awards have worked toward a common goal.
These are people who either ran some sort of drive with a corporate sponsor to make weather radios available either free of charge or at a reduced cost. These are people who promoted the services to a wide audience. These are people who even, in some instances, have made financial contributions in which supported a new weather radio transmitter to be built in their area.
All about saving lives.
Absolutely.
That's Chris Vaccaro with NOAA in Washington, D.C. This is the 11th year the federal government has paid tribute to people who have gone to significant effort to help promote the use of NOAA Weather Radio and maybe save some lives. James, congratulations. We're proud of you.
Well, thanks. It was the whole thing was a partnership between ABC 3340 Television here where I work in Birmingham and Public Supermarkets, which is a large chain here across the southeastern states. And we were able to offer the Midland Weather Radios for under $30. And, you know, for a same weather radio, that's not a bad price. And thousands were sold. And really one bit of news, David, that came out of that, the night before the Mark Trail Awards, Representative Brad Ellsworth of Indiana introduced a bill that mirrors state legislation in Indiana called CJ's Law that sailed through the General Assembly in Indiana. And what that does, it will require all mobile homes installed after June 30th to be equipped with the NOAA Weather Radio receiver. And that bill was co-sponsored by Spencer Backus, the representative from Alabama. And I think that's just a wonderful thing. And Catherine Martin, the mother of CJ, who was killed in that Evansville, Indiana tornado in 2005 on November 6th, she got a Mark Trail Award as well. And really, I think out of all of the award winners, she was the most powerful because she had quite a story to tell. Instead of being bitter and cynical and I didn't get a warning, she realized that there was a problem, that nobody in their mobile home park had a weather radio. So she rolled up her sleeves after she, you know, went through the grieving process to the loss of her two-year-old son and really has promoted weather radio. So I think seeing Catherine Martin and meeting her and her husband John, that was a real highlight of the trip for us.
When you see people like Mrs. Martin, it seems to me like it really would be so easy just to be bitter and angry, and yet she has taken a tragedy and turned it around into something positive to help other people, and that's really commendable.
You know, so many times we've seen people that have suffered a tragic loss during a tornado, they'll, you know, claim that they got no warning and, you know, just it's all this kind of stuff going down the wrong path. She took a positive approach and a very proactive approach. So, again, I salute Catherine and John Martin, who's really stepped up the efforts to help get this legislation rolling, and let's hope that it sails through and we'll start getting weather radios in all mobile homes.
Okay. And really, to put a mobile home, to manufacture a mobile home and have a weather radio already included won't cost them that much, because they'll mass buy those radios and they probably can do it for $20 a trailer, $20 a mobile home.
Under 10 bucks, JB. It's not a big cost issue. It's just a safety issue, and I think that's a win-win for everybody. And the other good thing about it is good to see some nonpartisan stuff going on here, because Ellsworth is a Democrat and Backus is a Republican. So, you know, this crosses all party lines here. It's a good thing.
I just want to say congratulations to James, too, because he won't do it for himself. But, you know, I know James, and I know television. And awards in television are, quite frankly, many times just plain stupid. But I know that this award means a lot to James because of what it is and where it comes from and what it represents. And he won't pat himself on the back, but it is a big deal. And so I think we all, again, should congratulate him.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think you really do deserve to be proud of yourself. And very obviously, some of the top people in government and NOAA feel as if it's a very worthwhile venture, or they wouldn't be there to say hello and thank you as well. You got to meet some pretty interesting people when you were there, didn't you?
Yep. It was a great week, and good to see a lot of old friends. One of my close friends in television weather, a guy named Rich Thomas, who does the weather down the road from us in Montgomery, Alabama, at WSFA, was the recipient as well. And I've known Rich for almost 30 years. And, you know, it's funny, we don't see each other that much, but we've got to spend some time together in Washington. So it was just a great week and a really good time. And, appreciate the opportunity.
And so you got to spend some time in D.C. doing some sightseeing. And speaking of that, how was the weather? Was it favorable for what you wanted to do?
Well, it was incredibly nice. We had a continental polar air mass, and something where we live down here, we just don't have that in the summertime. Up there, most of the week, highs were in the 70s and lows in the 50s. And my wife had a sweater on one morning, so I thought, wow, this is awesome. Unbelievable.
Very good. Well, glad you had a good time, and I know you're probably glad to be back in the saddle at work. And Kevin, let me ask you, you're back in the saddle at work, not exactly from a fun time away from the job, but how does it feel to be back in the work saddle?
It feels pretty good. Again, it's kind of a slow road back, but, you know, after you sit around just doing nothing, watching TV and not being able to sit or stand for a long period of time, to actually get back into the groove and do actual work is really quite refreshing, David.
Well, does this mean that you're not going to be able to join us for the WeatherBrains bowling tournament Friday evening?
Maybe if I could be a pin setter or something like that, I could do that.
I think you ought to do the weightlifting tournament we have coming up this weekend.
Yeah, that plus the
calendar.
Yeah, that plus the flag football match is going to be a challenge anyway.
How are you doing the weather? I mean, you're standing up on the wall and everything. I mean, are you in position or are you sitting down or what?
This is something that sort of ramped up over a period of time, and then over a weekend, I just got to a point where actually what was happening is it was a bulging disc that was pressing on my sciatic nerve, not to get too technical, but once that reached a particular threshold over a weekend, at that point I couldn't stand or sit.
Sounds awful. Was it as bad as I'm thinking?
It was pretty painful.
I said, if you can't stand or sit, what do you do?
You lie down. You lie on your back. And when you have to move around, I kind of would be able to roll over a little bit, and I could crawl pretty well. And so we went through, I've been going through some physical therapy prior to that, because again, it was ramping up, and that seemed to be helping. But then we sort of just crossed this threshold where we said, okay, we need a surgeon, and they went and did their thing. And so it was a couple of days before the surgery, but then I had that on a Thursday and walked out of the hospital Saturday morning. So that was a miracle that I thank the Lord for making those doctors. So there you go.
I bet there's somebody else that probably is getting some thanks out of this. Would there by chance be a Mrs. Kevin, as in Tracy Selly, who might have helped you through this?
I can't tell you what a trooper my wife is, and she deserves more credit than she will ever be able to get, and my many, many, many thanks, because, you know, not only is it hard, I'm a fairly large guy. I'm 6'4", and I'm pretty fat, and so...
Got a long neck, too, right?
Yeah, who's fairly petite person. It's number one hard to deal with somebody who's so big, but then when that person is someone that you love and who is in pain, it makes it even harder. And she held up like a real trooper, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, wives never get enough credit, in my opinion, for the things that they do. Well, let's switch gears and get off the medical beat for a minute and talk about something developing in weather that, Kevin, you have had a role in looking into this, and it's something that has been a big issue for folks, especially in the eastern and southern part of the nation. It's all about smoke. Sometimes smoke is just a minor annoyance. Other times, though, it's a greater threat to our health and safety, such as the major forest fires that plagued Georgia and Florida recently. They caused air quality to degrade over a large area. Scientists are making headway, though, into forecasting what large areas of smoke are likely to do. This is interesting stuff. This is all thanks to a new smoke forecast tool the National Weather Service added to its array of online products this spring. Now, the tool helps project thickness and movements of smoke during significant wildfires. Kevin has been looking into this new tool. Kevin, I understand the data from this system has already been coming in handy, and that I'm told this has even benefited hurricane hunters. Is that true?
Yeah, Dave, it's pretty interesting. Now, this isn't something, you know, that we're going to necessarily use on an everyday basis, maybe every now and then, but it's something kind of cool. It's new. It's just something that I wanted everybody to know about and to have in their online arsenal of things that they can turn to. So I turned to Dr. Paula Davidson with NOAA, who monitors the data quality for many products on the Internet, including the new smoke forecast tool.
The smoke forecast tool is a tool that predicts where smoke from a burning fire will be for the next day.
So we're generally talking about this is larger scale forest fires. This is not something necessarily you would use camping or for other smoke related things, smokestacks, factories.
No, it's specifically for burning fires that we have information from satellite imagery.
Well, now tell me how that works. I was going to go into that, but let's go ahead and go into the data points. You have satellite imagery.
Right.
So how does that get into a computer model?
Well, there are, of course, pixel by pixel information about whether something is hot enough to be on fire.
Oh.
And
so that's actually looking at ground or the smoke particles?
At the ground.
Okay.
Seeing if it's hot enough to be on fire.
Right.
And then an analyst, an expert on satellite imagery, correlates those positions with the presence of smoke also in a satellite picture to make sure that it's really a fire and not some other hot place.
And there's some skill, I guess, that then the human has that the computer does not to determine from regular cloud cover?
Yes, they're experienced, and they also look at a number of different satellite information so that it's not all the same sensor that they're pulling into. So it's something of a synthesis. And the analyst basically filters that and discards those positions that don't have smoke associated with them. For example, in a hot summer, a parking lot can get that much of a thermal signal.
Really?
Yeah.
So they find hot spots on the satellite data, and then what are they doing with it?
That's a computer file that is then used in the simulation of smoke transport, which is a calculation that is driven by the weather forecast model.
Okay.
And then includes on that a dispersion model that takes into account where those particles would be as the winds and other diffusion processes work on them to push the smoke around in our atmosphere.
So that sounds like it's going to look at, when you say dispersion, the direction a given pixel is going to go, but then is that also going to include the rate at which it dissipates or mixes?
Yes, that's part of the simulation of where these particles move. So clearly they're settling, as gravity works on them, but they're being blown along by the wind. And so there's a simulation that's fairly complicated, but takes into account these various processes. And then we capture where the smoke will be in hour-by-hour snapshots in the prediction throughout the next day.
So then take me into the realm of a typical user who maybe is not a meteorologist, but let's say I hear on the news there are wildfires in my area. I want to know a little bit more about it. I've got a tennis match the next day at noontime.
Uh-huh.
What can I expect to see then? I see in the midday, one day, here's some smoke. Is this going to be a problem for me playing tennis tomorrow? Is that the kind of output I can get?
You could.
And what would be the form? You said some graphics, but is there a measurement?
Well, the graphics display the predicted smoke concentration, and there's a scale with it. If that is in an area that you live in, you might want to point at that location and click. I think you might want to do this several times to get down to your town, for example.
Sure.
If you happen to know where your latitude and longitude is, you
right.
can do it that way too, but most people don't keep that, you know, in the back of their head.
All of our listeners know exactly their latitude, longitude.
Yeah, and so you can do this through the point data feature, and keep pointing and clicking, and then we'll come up a table of values.
Well, and that time frame seems interesting to me because I mentioned, okay, I've got tennis at noon, but mm-hmm. maybe going out to dinner at 6 o'clock, there could have been a wind shift, which would have been important.
Exactly, and that's a good point. So if you look in these tabular values, you can either loop it through if you really like looking at pictures, or if you like looking at tables of numbers, you can do it that way. And you'll see, smoke predicted values will rise and fall as the winds do push the particles around. So you might want to plan to avoid the times of day where the smoke concentration is high and plan accordingly.
So how did it perform in the southeast this spring?
What we saw is that the performance was reasonably good. In fact, sometimes surprisingly good, because there were a couple of opportunities to see it. Unfortunately, where the smoke was close to the surface, and it was a problem closing down highways in Florida and so on. But one anecdote that I'll share is that the fires in Georgia and Florida were burning for you know, quite some time. An early season tropical storm named Andrea formed off the coast of Florida, and it was sort of sitting out there for a while and then dissipated below the level of tropical storm. But while it was out there, the Hurricane Hunter mission went out there to see the to do measurements and analysis as they do, and they actually flew through the smoke that we predicted out there with this tool, which was rather surprising, because as you know, there's no in situ monitoring for smoke over the ocean, so we had no other means to say where that smoke that we could see from satellite somewhere in the column might be, and it was certainly interesting to see how low it was.
So it's not something you're going to use every day, but something to have in your online arsenal. Tell everybody the website again.
It's weather.gov/AQ.
Guys, that's Dr. Paula Davidson from NOAA. This is really interesting. One of the data sets that they use comes from the U.S. Forest Service, and that group actually has existing files on all forest areas across the country. So if an area starts to burn, they know what types of trees and fuel are available in that area, and then know how much smoke that given area is going to produce if it is burning, guys.
That's amazing. You know what I'm thinking out of this, Kevin, is this ties, in a way to me, ties back to one of our previous netcasts on WeatherBrains just recently, where we talked about the new GOES satellites and all the technology that's coming. This is yet another of the many benefits that we're seeing from the weather satellite. You know, the old days of just the old blurry, fuzzy picture are long gone, and we're seeing this rich field of information at this greater and greater resolution. And frankly, I wouldn't have thought that smoke forecasting would be of any big significance, but we sure have learned otherwise that it is. So.
Yeah, you're right. It creates a lot of particulate matter in the air, and that mm-hmm. is a big, big cause of concern. A number of deaths are related to various particulates in the air. And, yeah. and your comment is very, very good. I'm actually working on another piece I think we'll have in a couple of weeks here. But you talk about the amount of data that's there. What's always amazing to me, in addition to that, is how creative people will take existing data sets once they're already there, but then find new ways to use them. And we're working on something that has to do with radar imagery, existing radar imagery, and hurricane data. So that'll be coming up in the weeks ahead.
She said weather.gov.what?
/AQ.
Okay. I'll bet that stands for air quality. What do you think?
Yes.
Am I a weather brain for that?
Yeah, you can get it. Weather.gov. Yeah.
I was amazed, too, going back to that satellite piece, and this ties off of that again, talking about using this information over and over again, Kevin. There are all these people, students, too, in universities. University of Wisconsin-Madison, perfect example. We're up there where they're doing a lot of satellite work, and they are taking data coming in off the satellites and harvesting it in new ways and just and doing the same thing with radar imagery and everything else. So we've really got a rich pool of information to sift through and learn how to use it, figure out how it benefits us here on the planet.
They're all so much smarter than we are.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I wouldn't understand half the stuff that they're doing, but anyway.
Several times over.
Well, now, you're a pretty sharp guy, Mr. Elliott. You were in the Weather Service. You know a thing or two. You have a year or two of experience under your belt. You can't pass yourself off as being a dummy. Doesn't work.
But it's sliding away.
No, it's getting better with age. It's like a fine wine.
JP is a great American weather legend.
That's right.
He's an encyclopedia in his brain about weather. You know, JP, really, you're the only person I can say the words Miles City, Montana to, and you'll come up with a weather fact or something about it. You know, most people would go, huh? But JB, he just got that computer mind. It starts accessing the data for whatever the city is that he
yeah, the aviation forecaster in the Weather Service sent out an aviation forecast one day, and he got the Miles City MLS call letters, ID letters, backwards, and he put MSL.
Oh.
So here came Muscle Shoals, Alabama with snow all afternoon, and it was as warm as it could be.
I'll bet you know all the three-letter identifiers for the whole country.
No, sir.
We should do a contest for that. Yeah, now, it's too easy to cheat because you can pull it up on the web now, but you used not to be able to do that.
I know WAY, which is the west entrance to Yellowstone National Park.
And isn't
what is the only three-letter ID that's actually the name of the city as well? JB knows this.
Ooh. Ely, Nevada. E-L-Y.
You got it. Bingo.
See? I told you, he's an encyclopedia. Hey, if we do any contests for that kind of thing, knowing the three-letter IDs, I can tell you guys one name who's ineligible. Not eligible to play.
Yep.
All right. Weather Roundtable right quick. Anything you guys wanted to cover? James, anything you just wanted to say about touring the nation's capital? Anything like that?
Well, I guess it just kind of restored my faith in humanity. Sometimes you see so much negative stuff in the news about bad things, but I met so many good people at that Mark Trail Awards ceremony from different walks of life, and not only television. It just made me feel good about humanity, and I think people are beginning to get it. I've said on this show, and I've said it many times in other places, that the siren mentality is going to kill a lot of people next time we have a big tornado outbreak. That's the idea that in order to be properly warned, you're going to hear a siren in your home. And that's just not true. And I think we're finally starting to turn the corner and get the word out about getting a weather radio in every home, especially every manufactured home. So it was kind of a feel-good week, and I think we got a long way to go, understand, but I think we're starting to make that big turn, which is a good thing.
All right.
Sure is.
Real good. JB, what about you? Anything up?
I was going to discuss the haves and have-nots of rainfall so far this year, but I failed to have time to get all my figures together. But basically, while we here in the Southeast are having one of the worst droughts ever, I'm not sure it's the worst one, places in Kevin's home in the South and Central Plains and Oklahoma and Missouri, even up into the Dakotas, have a huge overdose of rain, and they will not ship it to us. I've been trying to get Kevin to ship us a train car load of rain.
My doctor advised against that. He said it'd be too strong, strenuous on my back.
The weight of water would be significant. Well, you know, we've been talking about weather radios during this program, and obviously you hear the crew on WeatherBrains talk frequently about the need to be prepared for approaching severe weather, whether it's tornadoes, whatever. Of course, being prepared is only possible, you know, if you have some way to know about it, if you've got to know ahead of time. Well, we here at WeatherBrains have decided to have, I guess you could say, a little fun, but at the same time, to help you get a chance to obtain those warnings when you actually need them, when they could save a life. Kevin, you have been a participant in this little, shall we call it, scheme as well?
James said he had a couple of extra radios to do something with, and so we thought, well, let's do something with WeatherBrains and see if we can get some of these radios out and get the word out. And so we would love to do this over the next couple of weeks. All you have to do, and all the details will be on the website at weatherbrains.com if you don't get it right here and right now, but all we would like you to do, each and every one of you who listens to the show, is send an email to at least one friend or family member who you think would enjoy the WeatherBrains program. And then send us a copy of that email, and the address again on the website, but it's radio@weatherbrains.com. And once a week for the next 5 weeks, we'll take one of those emails and we'll draw a winner, and we'll get you one of these really, really nice Midland radios. So again, it's at weatherbrains.com. Send an email to a friend, a family member, somebody that you know you think might like the show. We would appreciate it because we get a little PR, and we get some weather radios out, and we'll have some fun with that over the next couple of weeks, David.
Yeah, sounds like fun, and maybe help save a life, too. Now, James, you're familiar with these radios, these Midland, and these are good models. These have the same alarm messaging capability, correct?
Yeah, these are the ones in which we partnered with Publix to sell them for $29.95, which is a tremendous price, and it's got everything you need. It's got a battery backup. It's got the digital technology that allows you to choose the county for which the alarm sounds, and these sold, I think, in our market, over 30,000 of them. In fact, at the Mark Trail Awards, the ladies from Publix were there, and they said in one of the stores in Birmingham they sold 3,400 in 1 week.
Wow. So if somebody's listening to us in Salt Lake City or Des Moines, Iowa, they can get one of these radios and program in the county in which they live, and it will alarm for a severe weather warning in that county whenever one hits, right?
Yep. Yeah, the old models were, you know, pretty crummy. I mean, every time it rained 100 miles away, that thing would wake you up in the middle of the night. My wife threw ours out the window. But these are digital, and if all you want is one county, that's all you're going to get. And that's the way it should work. They work very well. You got to program in the frequency of the weather radio in your area and the county code, and you can get that from your local National Weather Service website. But they work very well, and Midland has just been a wonderful partner in this project, and it'll be fun to win one of those things.
Good deal.
I have one of those, and they work real, real good. Very sensitive.
Good deal. One more time, Kevin, the address is radio
at weatherbrains.com.
Okay, and then just CC us when somebody who wants to do this just sends out an email to the friend or family member, just CC us to that address. Right,
you have surmised it perfectly.
I'm a weather brain.
I think for next week we ought to do Weather Brains bumper stickers and have Kevin out in the prize patrol. And if he sees anybody with a Weather Brains bumper sticker, he pulls him over with a flashing yellow light and gives him
the weather radio.
Well, that means if he's going to pull somebody over, we have to issue him the Weather Brains Yugo again in a gas card.
True. So yeah, that'll be special. It'll be a great photo op.
Something to think about. All right, gang, time for the Weather Center this week. First off, we get to learn about some of those technical sounding weather terms like no gaps, UK Met, Jim, and more. Yep, I am speaking English. It's WeatherBrains 101 with the distinguished Professor Peters, who gives us some insights into computer models used in forecasting. And then, following that, it's This Week in Weather History with Bill Murray, taking us back to this week in 1957, a time when residents of Cameron, Louisiana, had to deal with a surprise that was ugly and very tragic. And it was during this week in 2005 that a National Weather Service forecaster gets a taste of the very kind of threat he was trying to warn others about. Hang on for the ride.
WeatherBrains 101 with Professor Peters.
Numerical weather prediction models are computer simulations of the atmosphere They take as the starting point the current analysis and evolve the state of the atmosphere forward in time using understanding of physics and fluid dynamics. The complicated equations which govern how the state of a fluid changes with time require supercomputers to solve them. The output from the model provides the basis for weather forecasts. I started this series with a look at the GFS, the Global Forecast System model. That's the flagship model of the U.S. Meteorological Service that goes out 2 weeks into the future. But what are some of the other models that are in use around the world? Models can generally be divided into two groups, global models and regional models. Let's take a look at some of the global models out there. NOGAPS. That's the model developed and used by the U.S. Navy. NOGAPS stands for the Navy Operation Global Atmospheric Prediction System. It is somewhat similar in coverage to the GFS, but with different physics. It's run twice a day out to about 144 hours. UK Met refers to the British meteorological model, similar to our GFS. The ECMWF, or the European Centre for Medium Range Weather Forecasting model, they have been in operation since 1979, and they're also a global model. GEM refers to the Global Environmental Multiscale model run by the Meteorological Service of Canada. The German Weather Service global model is called the GME, and the French Weather Service version is ARPEGE, A-R-P-E-G-E. I'll save some of the alphabet soup for the regional models for another WeatherBrains episode. If you have questions about weather terms and you want to know more about them, send them to question@weatherbrains.com.
And let's take a look back at some interesting weather history from the week of June 26th to July 2nd. It was on June 26, 1957, that residents of Cameron, Louisiana, went to bed thinking they had plenty of time the next day to evacuate in advance of Category 2 Hurricane Audrey. The storm was not expected to arrive until late the next day, or at least that's what official bulletins from the U.S. Weather Bureau said. Now, the same folks would awaken to the sound of water under their homes as the storm intensified rapidly during the night and began to move much more rapidly toward the shore, arriving on shore by early that morning and trapping lots of folks in their homes. The storm strengthened from a central pressure of about 973 millibars down to 938 millibars overnight. Top winds were 145 miles an hour, making it a Category 4 hurricane. 390 people would die. Another 192 would never be found. Now, Lee Trevino's famous quote is, "If you're caught on a golf course during a storm and are afraid of lightning, hold up a one iron, because not even God can hit a one iron." But Lee wasn't following his advice, as he and two other golfers were struck by lightning at the Western Open Golf Tournament, Oak Brook, Illinois, back on June 28, 1975. And it was Lightning Safety Awareness Week when a forecaster at the National Weather Service in Des Moines, Iowa, was typing a bulletin about a nowcast for a severe thunderstorm that was approaching the area. Suddenly, he felt a force grab him as he worked at his keyboard. It was electricity from a nearby lightning strike that had traveled through the electronic circuitry and struck him indirectly. He was taken to the hospital and released, the second time the building had been struck in the past few years. That was back on June 29, 2005. And way back in 1776, on July 1st, the Continental Congress was debating whether the 13 American colonies should declare their independence from Great Britain. Back in Philadelphia, the weather all spring had been extremely warm and steamy. And on that morning, John Dickinson had just finished his great appeal for remaining loyal to the British. When rain began to fall, as John Adams stood to deliver his oration for independence, a summer thunderstorm broke over the city, and the founding father, who was very scared of lightning and thunder as a child, actually delivered his own thunderous speech. That's This Week in Weather History.
Thank you very much, Bill Murray. If you'd like to contact the Weather Geeks at WeatherBrains, our email address is question@weatherbrains.com. If you'd like to give us a telephone call, we'd love to hear from you. We have a toll-free voicemail number you may use for leaving a message for us. We'll all hear it. 1-888-247-8627 is the number. Again, 1-888-247-8627. For the WeatherBrains crew, James Spann, J.B. Elliott, Kevin Selly. Got to get used to saying that name again. Anyway, I'm David Black. Thank you for listening. Hope you'll join us again next time for the next episode. WeatherBrains, copyright 2007, all rights reserved. Adios. It is good to say Kevin Selly's with us again. That's kind of a new thing for a while.
Sure is. And feel better, James.
Let me go to the doctor tomorrow and get a shot or something.
All right. I got three quickies. One of them's for you, James.
Yes.
First of all, we should mention Lightning Safety Week all week. We'll link that on weatherbrains.com. Reed Timmer, storm chaser, videographer, who's been on this program not too recently, amazing wedge tornado in Canada on his website, tornadovideos.net. And the one for James, from the Dallas Morning News, top Dallas law firm Thompson & Knight started a dedicated climate change practice earlier this month with 26 lawyers.
Wow.
Today, Dallas Vinson and Elkins Law Firm unveiling its 41-lawyer group. All of these in anticipation of the explosion of climate-related lawsuits coming.
Wow.
People who watch this predicting things like when a ski resort comes up with no snow in a given year and is forced to close down, they're going to sue people.
It's James Spann's fault for causing global warming. That's the answer to everything.
Now, who are they going to sue when the Mississippi River freezes? That's what I want to know.
They'll figure a way, I guess.
Somebody somewhere is going to need a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Hey, Dan, thanks for letting me join you again, guys.
Had fun.
Great to have you.
Y'all be good.
Maybe next week we'll be all at 100%. Y'all have a good week.
Good night.
Take care.
Bye.